From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made 1 year ago when the cryptocurrency known as Bitcoin was trading for around $3,500. 1 year later, its price is nearly twice that number, opening today a shade under $7,000. If you want to tell the story that way, you could say it's been a big year for Bitcoin. But that is not the headline we're seeing just about everywhere. Instead, gleeful anti-crypto writers are publishing pieces under the headline, "The Death of Bitcoin." How could the first major cryptocurrency be dying if its value has almost doubled in a year? Well, the answer is complex. Cryptocurrency has had a tendency to take off on wild swings in the last several years. And while it's true that Bitcoin was down at $3,500 a year ago, it's also true that Bitcoin peaked this year near $13,000 in July. Today, it's half that number. So pick your narrative. Bitcoin is thriving or Bitcoin is dying. Most Americans still aren't all that familiar with this form of currency, and most people would never think to use it in actual transactions. That's part of the challenge for cryptocurrency. Is it something more than an investment right now? As we head toward 2020, we're talking about what we've learned about Bitcoin and cryptocurrency in 2019, and frankly, in the last 2 years since we last talked about it on this program, almost 2 years to the day. This is not about keeping score or predictions, because our guests have urged us to look at the long term, not just the ebbs and flows in the short term. And our guests in studio include Gary Palmer Jr., who's a founder of MintingCoins.com and Bitcoin NYS. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much.
Also with us is George Conboy, chairman of Brighton Securities. And I wouldn't call you a crypto troll.
I'm a crypto observer, Evan.
Trying to be the fly in the ointment. Nice to have you. Always good. And on the line with us is Mike Komaranski, who's head of Grapefruit Trading and a longtime Bitcoin supporter, though perhaps a more of a Bitcoin Cash supporter than Bitcoin, and we're going to talk about that. Welcome back, Mike. How are you? Are you there, Mike? Oh, I'm not hearing Mike. Give me 1 second. We're going to see if we can find Mike. Mike, you stay there, and we're going to try to find you on your end. I'm here. I'm in our studio. George is here. Gary is here. And in the last year, again, Gary, you can set the narrative however you like. This is one of those cases where statistics can give you just about anything you want. What's the lesson? Let's do 12 months and then we'll do 24 months. But what's the story of this year in crypto and in Bitcoin in particular?
Well, I would say for the average person in any sort of technology or space, we have a tendency to overestimate in the short term and then underestimate on the long term. And so Bitcoin is a new technology. Bitcoin is the best performing asset class that I think anyone has ever seen. And it has unique properties that are unlike any technology that has come before it. At the same time, it's just a new technology, a new protocol that exists on top of the internet, just like all of our phones can work together across the world because of the SMTP settings. I think we're used to popping those in our iPhone. And now we have blockchain technology like Bitcoin, Lightning Network, Ethereum. And these cryptocurrencies are allowing any two people around the world or machines or smart contracts to have a relationship to transact with each other without requiring a third party in the middle. And this is very interesting for people. There's lots of new technology that's being developed. And while not every American can see the value in this right now, there are millions of people all over the world that are taking advantage.
Okay. George, from your perspective, what's the story of the last 12 months with crypto?
So the story of the last 12 months with crypto is not what crypto is or has been. The story is what crypto has not yet become. What crypto was designed to be was touted as, and I will say, may yet become, but is not. It is not a means of exchange. And Gary's always very good about giving us examples of, yes, you can buy a pizza with it, and you can get a, what's that card they call it, Gary?
Well, there's
shift
different
card?
Yeah, well, there's all sorts of companies that are connecting with Visa, and Visa also making their own technology that will allow anyone to buy and sell using, you know, the existing third parties that we're used to.
So it does exist that you can buy things with it, but practically speaking, no one's buying anything with it. So Bitcoin remains a virtual asset. It remains a trading vehicle, something you can buy and sell, make money, lose money. But as a practical matter, it is not currently a means of exchange. And to achieve broader acceptance, I think they've got to go more down that road.
We need to see WXXI conducting our membership campaigns asking for cryptocurrency contributions, George.
Oh, well, wait a minute. You know what we'll get is Kodak Coin. When they come out with that... It's going to be something.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Jumping the shark before it even tries. Mike Komoransky, who is the head of Grapefruit Trading. Mike, the last time we talked to you, you were not with Grapefruit, I don't think. So tell us about what Grapefruit Trading is, first of all.
Grapefruit Trading is an over-the-counter Bitcoin exchange. So if you're looking to buy Bitcoins with U.S. dollars and you don't feel like connecting to a Bitcoin exchange because you don't trust them, Grapefruit Trading does post-trade settlement, which means we agree to a price, you send the money, and then we send the coins. Very simple, and we filled a nice niche for people looking to acquire a hefty sum of Bitcoins.
Okay, and Mike, to be clear for listeners, sometimes when we talk about cryptocurrency, we use the term Bitcoin almost in the way that we use the word Band-Aid to talk about bandages or Kleenex to talk about tissues. But Bitcoin is a very specific thing. There's other kinds of cryptocurrencies. Does Grapefruit work with others or just Bitcoin?
We work with pretty much any cryptocurrency that that exists. We really focus on maybe the top 20. I'd say like by now, 2019, the end of 2019, there's at least 6,000 different currencies. Mm. And most of them aren't even worth discussing. For example, the coin that we created today called the Evan coin.
Wait, did he say that's not worth discussing?
He did.
It's your show.
Mike actually sent me via virtual wallet 999,999 Evan coins. I'm not sure it equates to anything, but there they are.
It was an exercise in showing you how easy it is today to create your own currency. And when that happens, number one, it's great. It's great that anyone can create their own scarce digital asset. I think it's fantastic. We're only just scratching the surface of what that means. But also it means you should really consider which coins you're going to put your money behind, because there's so many different choices that it makes sense that when talking about a currency, currency is a shared belief system. We believe that you can spend a dollar because it's been usable for so long. So Bitcoin has been around not nearly as long as the dollar, and certainly not nearly as long as gold, but people sort of seem to get behind Bitcoin, the idea. And for that reason, you're not going to see people get behind the Evan coin, because Evan coin is new and doesn't provide anything different than Bitcoin.
I'll get behind the Evan coin.
No, I take the point, though. And you know, Mike, not to sort of jump ahead here, because I do want to kind of get your take on what you see the story of the last 12 to 24 months since we last talked crypto is. Mm-hmm. But if Bitcoin itself, and when we talk about individual cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin, Bitcoin Cash, Bitcoin Gold, Ethereum, Litecoin, and all of these other options, if Bitcoin, sort of the original and the most valuable individual unit of cryptocurrency, is not as efficient, I mean, I know you've been critical vis-a-vis Bitcoin Cash, for example, in the past. If Bitcoin is not as efficient, if it's more cumbersome, is the reason it is hanging on to sort of its market share because of that developed belief system, that confidence, simply that time, that familiarity?
Yeah, I 100% believe that. Bitcoin, it may not be the best coin out there in terms of the features, but it was the first and it has the biggest network. So it's going to be hard to knock that guy out of position, even if there's something better in place two or place three.
So what's what is the story then, Mike, of the last 12 to 24 months since we last talked about this?
Well, not much has changed technically from Bitcoin's standpoint. I think, if anything, the narrative of the supporters is changing, and that's not necessarily a good thing. What I've seen from this time last year is people supporting the idea that you shouldn't spend your Bitcoin. And it's a very counterintuitive thing. You've just created a brand new currency. Why shouldn't you want to spend it? Well, they're saying that it's better to hold your cryptocurrency. It's better to not spend it, because spending is it's inherently bad. I'm not sure why people are saying this. I don't agree with it. But, you know, if everyone agrees to hold it as a group, then I guess what's supposed to happen is the people that want to buy into it have to pay a higher price because no one's selling. So the narrative has gone from spend your crypto, spend your Bitcoin, get adoption, get people on board, to hold your Bitcoin, don't spend anything, and the price will go up. And I think as that narrative takes hold, people start to compare it to, like, you know, a pyramid scheme or a Ponzi scheme. Like, the only thing that it's good for is to hold it and watch the price go up. Well, for me, that's not a currency, and that's why I'm supporting a few other coins right now,
okay,
including Bitcoin Cash.
And I think, you know, George Conboy, that's your point, is if it's treated as an instrument in the investment class and not really a useful currency, then its future is going – that is not a sustainable long-term future if it never becomes an actual usable currency.
If it can be used to buy something, you show me a pizza you bought with Evancoin, I'll help you eat the pizza, and I'll give you a vote. Until you can buy something with it, it doesn't mean it's bad or it's going away, but it's not going to get where the Garys of the world would like it to get.
But let me ask Mike and Gary then, on that scale, because a couple of years ago, part of the conversation was about how do we get to a point where it is more usable? And I thought there were two lessons that I went back and listened to and drew from there. Number one, that has to be part of the goal. But number two, the average person probably doesn't realize how many venues they could use cryptocurrency in if they wanted to. Mike, is that true? I mean, if you really want to functionally use cryptocurrency, whether it's Bitcoin or others, to make payments, to buy goods and services in our society right now, how often can you use it?
It's hard. It's very hard. I don't think adoption has been the focus for the past 2 years. And because of that, it's just hard to spend your Bitcoins anyway. But maybe that's by design of the people, of the supporters.
Yeah, okay. Gary, what do you think?
The analogy here is that this is 1994, and we're all saying the internet's going to fail because live streaming video doesn't work yet. You know, the spending and transacting makes something a currency, and it makes it more usable, even though currency represents a very small population and total market value of the economic system. The ultimate reason why Bitcoin was invented was because as we directly see in the original Genesis block, the very first Bitcoin block that was published, with the chancellor on the brink of bailout in the UK and the global financial problems we were having across the world, we were recognizing that there were federal bank, central bank problems where the federal bank in the United States, and central banks around the world are private banks that work with government treasury departments to print money. And they can print so much money that that dilutes the value of all the rest of the money in the world. Countries go into either inflation or hyperinflation. In America, we do have targets of inflation. But the whole point of Bitcoin was to have a controlled emission rate so that people could very clearly for hundreds of years know how much new Bitcoin was going to get created. And to have a system of money, let it be that we use it more like a gold or more like a currency, a system of money that is publicly verifiable where anyone can view it, anybody can use it, it's global, it is borderless, it is decentralized, there's no one entity that controls it, it's immutable. Once any transaction happens, that transaction cannot be rolled back. And this has allowed people all across the world to have access to a monetary system, a permissionless monetary system that allows them to be part of a world economy. Especially when we see countries like Japan that has negative interest rates, where it costs money for the bank to hold our money. We know that there are major reports of, you know, the $100 bill taking out of circulation in the United States government, you know, the economy in our country. We know that central banks have bought more gold in 2018 than any time since the gold standard ended in 1971. We know the central bank has had 51 rate cuts in the past 6 months. More than any since the financial crisis. We see hundreds of billions of dollars, more than the total amount of Bitcoin being put into the repo markets, allowing liquidity to happen for the overall system. And we find out this week there's going to be another $425 billion, nearly a half a trillion dollars, going into the liquidity markets, numbers that we have not seen since the 2008 financial crisis. And all the while this is happening, the people who don't own Bitcoin, the people who are just telling us that everything is okay, they're saying that Bitcoin is ending, that, you know, Bitcoin isn't working, that Bitcoin is failing. Yet the major headlines that we're seeing are Fidelity. You know, we all know Fidelity. They opened up the Fidelity digital investments. They're doing very, very well. That was 2018. 2019, we find out they're expanding into Europe. Last time we were talking about the futures and the back futures, the backed futures hit another record-breaking day yesterday. So in the global financial system, from institutional investors, from every single macroeconomic statistic that we can see that the value of Bitcoin being a secure digital gold with a future potential for exchange, of which, you know, if people want to use it, they can use it. You know, Starbucks can be bought today with Bitcoin. It's just it's the market is scattered, and there's not a lot of standardization yet because we're so early. But this is what is actively happening right now, and everyone is expecting more good things to come.
Now, to be clear here, when you say Starbucks can be bought, you can go to any Starbucks and use Bitcoin to purchase a latte.
Yeah, so there's apps. So the Winklevoss twins, you know, the Winklevoss twins, they have a cryptocurrency app, and then through that cryptocurrency app, you can purchase several different items directly with cryptocurrency through that app. And so Starbucks doesn't realize they're accepting cryptocurrency. But at the same time, you know, BACT, B-A-K-K-T, is a new global financial organization that was started by ICE, the Intercontinental Exchange. They own practically every major stock market in the world, including the New York Stock Exchange. BACT was founded with Microsoft and Starbucks. So Starbucks owns this major futures cryptocurrency corporation, which is already having record-breaking days buying and selling cryptocurrency for institutional investors. It's only a matter of time.
They should put the name HODL on your cup if you're paying with crypto.
They would spell it the wrong way, and then it would just say hold.
Listeners, if you want to call the program with questions or comments as we talk cryptocurrency, it's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program connections@WXXI.org. But what our guests are talking about sort of puts the whole conversation about crypto into sort of bifurcated camps. It's either, well, I want to buy it as an investment and hope the value goes up and hope, as Mike mentioned, that no one's going to be actually using it. And that's what we've seen apparently for at least roughly the last year. Or there's going to be an encouraged actual use of the currency, and not just Bitcoin, but other cryptocurrency. And maybe it's whatever the value and the price per unit will go down, but people can actually use it. And that seems to be at cross purposes with one another. I mean, because right now, George, I mean, if people are saying to you at Brighton Securities, should I be buying cryptocurrency? That's purely an investment question, right? They're not actually saying, should I buy it so I can use it? That's what they mean when they're asking you.
No one asks for that. And I would, two things. Number one, remind your listeners, any of them who bought their Starbucks this morning with Bitcoin, please call us. Let's hear from the guy who bought his coffee this morning with
Bitcoin. You're saying not many people are doing that.
I don't know. We're going to find out.
Yeah. I think it's probably not a lot.
I'd make up a word and say trifurcated. Not bifurcated.
Okay.
And a better example would be the bell curve. And from what I hear with Gary, Gary's talking about two ends of the bell curve. He says, guys like me, we love it. It's fabulous. It's going to be great. And he makes a good case for that. He says there's people who hate it and they say it's going to end. That's the far end of the bell curve. The bell curve, not just nationally, but internationally, the center of the bell curve couldn't care less. They kind of know what it is. It's not really useful for very much. They've heard about it on your show. And it's just outside their daily life. And the idea that having more cryptocurrencies will make it easier to use, easier to become a means of exchange, seems unlikely. The more difficult and complicated you make things sound or you make them act, the less likely they will be easily adopted by the mainstream. Now, I'll go back to the counterexample of Gary's early internet story, because there are a lot of ways to use that example. Gary's got a very plausible story of, hey, we never thought the internet would be this big. The other side of that is 1998, 1999, everybody knew the internet would be big. They knew it would be huge. The problem was, investors did. And what happened in the late 90s was you had three investment stories about the internet. Story one was pets.com. You bought it, you thought it was going to be fabulous, and it went bankrupt. Story three is amazon.com. It went down 90% in the bubble, but it came back and made everybody a fortune. Story two is Corning. a company that's been down in southern tier of New York for a million years, and they went way up during the tech bubble, and you could have paid $110 a share in early 2000 for Corning. You can buy all the Corning you want today at $28 a share. They didn't become Amazon. They didn't become Pets.com. They're still there employing people, making product, but they weren't a particularly good investment. And so when you look at that example, it can be anything you want to make it into. It doesn't necessarily mean we're on the cusp of a new millennium.
Okay. Now, Mike, I am curious to know from your perspective, if you are, you sound to me like you're annoyed with this idea of telling people to hold as opposed to actually utilize cryptocurrency and find ways to make it more accessible to more people, that when it becomes part of this investment class, then its sort of purpose is kind of defeated. I mean, is that a fair assumption on how
very annoyed. Yeah. Very annoyed. I'm sort of, there's Bitcoiners who support Bitcoin no matter what. There's no coiners who hate Bitcoin and will never buy a Bitcoin. There's people called pre-coiners who don't have any Bitcoin, but they're willing to learn and buy something. I'm more of a post-coiner, which is, like, I've seen Bitcoin go through these ebbs and flows. And the current narrative of hold and don't bother with adoption, that's very, very annoying. It was so much fun in the early days to say, where can you spend your Bitcoin? And you rattle down a list of, you know, here's a pizza shop, here's a VPN network that's selling something online, here you can buy some t-shirts. That was great. Now it's, where can I spend Bitcoin? Oh, well, you can't. You're just supposed to hold it. I mean, I wouldn't join that network. I can see why people wouldn't want to.
Yeah. Gary, do you want to jump on that point there? I mean,
There's a lot of points there.
You win. Before
it's coming from the left and the right.
Before we follow up there, because Gary kind of winced at a couple of the points there, I do want to read an email, our first email from a listener, because I think this email is a little bit instructive to the way the broader audience may be hearing conversations about crypto. Adam writes and says, "It seems that right now cryptocurrency is a product for wealthy people, and I don't say that in any kind of a way to poke fun or to minimize it. I'm just saying it honestly. Who in the world can afford this? And if people can't, how can you make it mainstream?" All right, Mike Komoransky, I'll start with you. What would you say to Adam?
Well, I'm actually seeing the most adoption in cryptocurrency in the poorest countries. So Venezuela, which just had a giant currency crisis and is still going through a currency crisis, I've seen little pockets of crypto economies pop up, especially Bitcoin Cash, where it's basically free to send, and you can do it with a cell phone to cell phone. You don't need any special technology. You don't need a computer. You don't need equipment. You can do these things from cell phone to cell phone. Those are the places that are actually adopting it. And Sudan, you can feed 100 families by sending a small amount of Bitcoin Cash to Sudan, and it's great to see them just bouncing coins off of each other phone to phone without ever having to transfer into their local currency.
Venezuela is a great example of everything Gary's talking about, right? Gary talks about central banks and problems and mismanagement and inflation and everything else. I don't think the problems are extreme as Gary makes out, but there are some places they are, and Venezuela is the poster child for that. So that's a good example.
Okay.
Wealth is... it's something indicative that you're living in a country where you don't have to worry about your money being inflated away by the central government. So, like, as a person in the United States, you're not worried that your dollar is going to be worth half of what it was next year. It's not going to happen. So Bitcoin might not be the most appealing to you, but someone whose central bank is going to just print millions and millions of more of their native currency, those are the people that actually are going out and getting the crypto.
Interesting. So, Gary, do you share Mike's annoyance with, and he's speaking kind of monolithically, and I'm sure there's a diversity in the community among people with different points of view, but he is perceiving, at least in recent months, this move towards holding and less about adoption, and that has annoyed him as someone who wants to see actual adoption and much more societal accessibility of crypto. Do you share that?
I share Mike's passion and Mike's heart and head. From everything I'm hearing, I'm in the same place by and large, and I share a lot of the frustrations about things not moving fast enough, and I really want everything to happen quicker and move faster. If there were just as many people using, you know, apples to apples and oranges to oranges, then, you know, I don't think the fees would be the same. I think it's interesting that we have these different options with these different cryptocurrencies. There's a lot of great different use cases. There's a lot of different points that are happening. And so I think that both the using the cryptocurrency as a currency, both of these things can happen. They do happen, but they happen in cycles. You know, Bitcoin is in these 4-year cycles where 3 years Bitcoin's either breaking even or barely going up. You know, one of those years it's probably going down, but then that fourth year we see this huge rise because there's a shock to the Bitcoin system where the total supply of new cryptocurrency, a new Bitcoin currency, is cut every 4 years. And so it's a change in what we call the stock to flow ratio. There's a lot less supply, that the demand is the same or increases. And so we see these huge jumps. That the next halving is set to happen in May 2020, less than 6 months away. And then, you know, after that, before and after that, you know, generally speaking, we would expect to see that price go up. But, you know, Let it be the internet in the early days. You know, when, you know, 1997, 1998, there was not a lot of confidence in the internet. Everyone thought it was going to fail. Everyone thought it was a fad. Nobody believed in it. Warren Buffett.
I don't think it was nobody who believed. There's a little hyperbole there, just a little bit.
But let me just validate what I'm saying. People were selling Apple stock for, you know, it was a 95% loss. 95% loss on Apple stock, 95% loss on Microsoft, 95% loss on Netflix. All of these things sold for, you know, $5 a share. And if you would have had 100 shares of Apple stock back in 1997, when everyone was saying not to buy it, when Warren Buffett wasn't a believer, then today you'd have $500,000. But nobody believed in it because everyone was selling it. Otherwise, it would not have been $5. So, you know, at 95% loss, the 95% of the market did not believe in the internet.
But Gary, Apple wasn't an internet stock, nor was it touted as an internet stock in 1997.
The same is true for Netflix. The same is true for each of these technology companies at the time.
Companies like Cisco. For a brief shining moment in the first quarter of 2000, Cisco Systems, a maker of routers, and the theory was we all need them. We all have them now. Cisco Systems was the number one market cap of any public company in the world. In the world. First quarter of 2000. But as you say, most of those stocks went down 95%, but not from 97. They went down 95% from 2000 to 2001. Apple was not an internet stock at that time. It was a computer maker.
It's still true for the internet stock companies that went down 95%, and they're still here today. And then we get into situations like cryptocurrency, where not only is it a unit of value, but it can be used as a unit of exchange. The system is stacked against us right now. So every time there is a cryptocurrency transaction, if you wanted to be by the book, then you need a, you know, that you need to claim extra taxes on it. So the system right now is set up so it makes it difficult and more costly to spend the cryptocurrency, and those are issues that are completely separate from the adoption. And you know, in places like Venezuela, there's an obvious use case for the need, because there's such a systemic distrust in the system of money. But, you know, all over the world, where people are worried about central bank decisions and they are worried about inflation in America, and while there might be a huge, you know, segment of people that think that, you know, all the money is fine and that stock market's going to go up forever, there's an equal amount, if not more, who are actually worried about holding their money day to day. People who understand what negative interest rates are, people who are worried about digital currency, people who are worried about fiat going away. Because not only do we live in a world where Bitcoin is here, but it's now, you know, other headlines that have happened are that we have central banks around the world that are talking about making their own central bank digital currencies, which would be a system like Bitcoin, except they would know every dollar that you make and every dollar that you spend, and being able to tax every dollar differently. And for example, a dollar that you held for a longer period of time could have a higher tax rate. And these are systems that are being talked about in Russia, in China, in Sweden, in Canada, in the United States.
So, Gary, are you suggesting that Bitcoin's a good vehicle for tax evasion?
No, not at all. What I'm saying is that Bitcoin is not a good vehicle for currency because there's additional taxes that people have to account for. And that, you know, when you're spending these things, you should follow the law. And so there's additional taxes that make it difficult for people to spend cryptocurrency. And, you know, so the government, through sticks and carrots, is encouraging people to hold cryptocurrency. You know, the New York is a very difficult business to do any crypto business in. It's extremely limited.
Any kind
limited.
Of business, period.
Well, in crypto, it
what it, kind of additional taxes? I'm curious now. I'm not trolling you. I'm actually curious about what kind of taxes are interposed in making it difficult as a medium exchange.
We got to pay capital gains tax on top of the regular sales tax, and you know when you do that on a per coffee basis,
yeah.
if you could imagine that could get very
by
impractical.
Tax theory. That's completely legit. That's not a special tax of any kind. That's not a special tax. If you have,
I don't have to pay capital gains tax every time I use dollars.
But your dollar isn't a medium exchange; it's moving in value. And if it's not moving in value meaningfully like Bitcoin is, if your Bitcoin doubles, we talked about $3,600.
I mean, I understand what you're saying, but we're just talking about, you know, why Bitcoin isn't being used now as a currency. And so I understand, like, everyone looks at it differently. The SEC sees it one way. The CFTC sees it a different way. Each of the, you know, regulatory bodies looks at Bitcoin through their own lens. There's no regulatory certainty. We have states that have different laws. We have Wyoming with some of the most progressive, strongest laws for Bitcoin and cryptocurrency in the world. We have, strong laws in Puerto Rico, strong laws in Arizona. We have uniform code around the country that's seeking to get approved. We have judges and federal officers and state officials who are each saying different things about crypto and cryptocurrency. In the meantime, there's massive developments happening in every country, in every city, and all this brain talent is being pushed outward.
All right, so hold on. I want to see if I can get Mike to kind of adjudicate this battle, because I think what I'm hearing from George, and tell me if I'm sort of translating this correctly, is Gary's frustration, for example, with if he could buy coffee but still have to pay, you know, someone is paying capital gains tax on the purchase of a coffee, is a frustration because you don't have to deal with that for a dollar. Your point, George, is that the valuation fluctuation of cryptocurrency is such that you think that is not unreasonable.
Yeah. If you paid a buck for this piece of slice of crypto,
yeah,
and you go buy your coffee for $3 and you give them this thing that you paid a dollar for, you've made a $2 gain. And according to any income tax code I've ever seen, that's ordinary income or capital income, that's a taxable gain. You've made money there.
This is the first time you've ever sort of endorsed a tax on this show ever, by the way.
I'm shocked.
My freshman year of college in accounting, when in doubt, deduct it out. I'm anti-tax, but you're right. That is the first time.
Okay. Mike Kamaransky, you want to adjudicate this? Go ahead.
There's no avoiding capital gains tax. So whether you're using a Bitcoin or a gold nugget, if it's gone up in value and you're using it to buy something, you're going to owe capital gains on it.
Yeah, but we're talking. Yeah, and so I agree on that. You know, and that's the law. The law must be good. So let's all follow the law. But you know, the other guests here are saying, you know, why can't we spend cryptocurrency yet? Why can't we spend cryptocurrency?
And you're saying this
yet?
Is why.
And I'm saying this is one additional roadblock. And so on one hand, people are, you know, upset that we can't spend cryptocurrency. And the other hand, they're saying, oh yeah, we should definitely keep. And this is totally fine that we keep capital gains on cryptocurrency because it's not a real currency. But at the same time, why can't we spend crypto and currency?
You're a smart guy, and the systems are very complex that maintain the blockchain and what have you. So if I go and take that Bitcoin I paid a buck for and I spend it and it's worth $5 when I spend it, it ought to be able to pretty easily process. A system should be able to be developed to track the fact that I made a $4 gain. I'll withhold dollars worth of tax on that and go on to live my life. And it's actually a boon then. If I've got a vehicle, if I've got dollars in my pocket,
you're adding layers of complexity needlessly.
I don't mind paying the capital gains tax on that gain, and it ought to be easy to track.
Okay. So, Mike, you want to add to that? Go ahead.
If you wanted to spend a euro at Starbucks, then you would owe capital gains on that.
Not in Europe, you wouldn't.
Well, fine.
And nobody here in Starbucks, I haven't gotten a call yet from somebody who bought their coffee with Bitcoin, and I'm not sure anybody in Rochester bought their coffee with the euro today.
Go ahead, Mike. You were going to say something else.
The capital gains thing is, it adds to my annoyance that we're expecting just in the long run for Bitcoin to go up and up and up and up. Mm. And that's when you start talking about capital gains. We should actually be talking about the losses that you're incurring, especially if you bought in like 2 years ago or July of this year. What happens if you spend money? What happens if you spend your Bitcoin on Starbucks now? You get to declare a loss.
Sure, and deductible.
Yeah, still the same thing. You still have to record, you know, that transaction every time. Yeah. And there's already a proposed law. This isn't a new idea. They could very easily rectify this by saying any purchases under $600 could be covered to not have to incur those sort of fees because it's not, you know, it's within some sort of tolerance. It's just that nobody wants to, you know, lawmakers don't want to create laws around this because it's such a tricky situation and there's so many different opinions. And so they don't want to solidify anything. And so while there's this decision paralysis at every level of government and commerce, there's real progress that's happening across major financial institutions around the world.
All right, so before I get our early break of the hour, because I'm way late, I do want to ask Mike to kind of weigh in on Gary's analogy that George has sort of thrown a little cold water on. Gary's saying in 1994, you know, Bryant Gumbel and Katie Couric can't even pronounce what the internet is on the Today Show, and there were a lot of doubters, and now, of course, it's ubiquitous and necessary. And, you know, Mike, in my mind, there are a lot of tremendous inventions that at first look don't necessarily signal societal change, but they happen. Then there's a lot of things that don't move the needle. I mean, when I was in seventh grade, there was a wise student sitting next to me in science class named Eric Jameson Deeds III, and he used neutrinos to create a theory for time travel and told me it was going to happen. Well, too bad, Deeds. It never happened. So the joke's on you. Actually, the joke's on me because he's one of the really good scientists and teachers in this country. He just never invented time travel. Do you view my cryptocurrency in that 1994 internet realm? Or do you think George is right, that there's a lot of things that, you know, exist, they don't go away entirely, but that doesn't mean that we're on the cusp of a major breakthrough? Or do you view it that way?
I think we are on the cusp of a major breakthrough. I think this is very early days. We don't know the full implications of what we've created. Again, this is the first time you have a scarce digital asset, meaning we've had digital assets for a long time, but you could copy them just like any file, and you could send them like any file. They just weren't scarce. If you have a picture on your phone, you could just copy it, and now you've got two pictures of your phone. With Bitcoin and cryptocurrency, you can't copy it. You can't spend it twice. I think what the signals is, one, a change in technology, but two, it's a paradigm shift for all of currency, for all of money. Like, we will never think of money in the same way. So, yes, treat these days, treat the hiccups, treat the swings and volatility as growing pains. But, you know, this isn't going away.
Yeah, but the analogy would be, this is the 1994 internet, but the creators of the internet are telling people, don't actually use it and share it. You know, hoard it for yourself, and, you know, good luck getting it to become adopted in that way. I think that's where Mike's frustration is.
Because they kind of said that a little bit.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I think that there is a frustration that if you have something that could change society in this way, don't urge people to kind of keep the light hidden. Let's get our only break of the hour, and I'm going to come back to a pile of your questions or comments via email. On the line with us is Mike Kamaransky, who's the head of Grapefruit Trading and a longtime Bitcoin supporter. George Conboy is the chairman of Brighton Securities. Gary Palmer Jr. is the founder of MintingCoins.com and Bitcoin NYS. And we'll come back to your questions and comments at connections@wxxi.org next. Coming up in our second hour, the Seneca Park Zoo Society is out with the 2019 Environmental Innovation Awards, and a big theme this year is food waste and food sustainability. So next hour, we talk about everything from nut butter to what students eat on college campuses to bull semen. Seriously, talk with you next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Let's sort through your questions. On Twitter, Sam is asking, is Bitcoin being used by transnational organized crime to launder money? I think Gary, early days, that maybe more so. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure occasionally, yes. I don't know.
It's only a fraction compared to the dollars. Dollars are by far the number one desired use of a currency for criminal activity.
Okay. Mike Komoransky, you want to add to that?
I don't see it firsthand. I can only hear the stories of that happening. But, yeah, I would say it's a small percentage.
Yeah. David wants to know if Facebook and cryptocurrency added any legitimacy this year. So let's take a step back here. Gary, you kind of want to add, kind of flesh out what David is emailing about. He's essentially saying, if Zuckerberg's crew thinks crypto is for real, does that add legitimacy? Does that help?
It does for the overall industry, and it does for the technology as well. And governments around the world, I believe, are afraid of Libra because it can not only can it be a semi-decentralized cryptocurrency, but it can be used with will and intention by, you know, a nation with no land and 2 billion people that can wield a lot of power over the fiat systems inside countries like India, where you know, there's a Facebook currency used by side by side with a national currency, and it's a huge draw for concern. That's why we see so much uproar and such immediate uproar against Libra, which I believe will happen.
Okay,
I agree with that. Yeah, anytime you have, remember, we talked about the two ends of the bell curve. The broad center is where it's not being adopted. And anytime you have a large organization that's well-known and ubiquitous adopting or moving in that direction, that bodes well for the use and utilization of cryptocurrency.
You agree with that, Mike?
Yeah, I was excited how fast Libra was moving, and it's really slowed down since then. I would just also caution that, is Libra actually decentralized? You can imagine a world where you're on Facebook, you post some critical thing about Rochester Public Radio, and then the next day your Libra account is frozen. Now, yes, it was a crypto, but now all of a sudden you can't spend it because you've made some controversial post. So make sure that the crypto that you're going after is in fact decentralized and not owned by a large corporation.
We like to call that open blockchain instead of just blockchain, open source blockchain that anyone can publicly view.
Okay. Jeremy writes to say, what impact do your guests think quantum computing will have on blockchain and or Bitcoin? Mike?
I think very little. I think Bitcoin will find a way, or cryptocurrency will find a way to route around the stuff that's happening in quantum computing. But I'm not an expert.
Okay. Gary?
It's it's a cat and mouse game. But generally speaking, one of the best practices is that you should always use a different Bitcoin address. So when you receive the money and then you spend a little of it, you always want to receive new Bitcoin at a new address because there's two layers of security. And so when quantum computing comes online, theoretically that quantum computing with the elliptical S-curve breakdown, it would be able to bypass the first layer of security, but not the second layer of security. So the short answer is always use a different Bitcoin address when you're receiving funds.
Here's a question from email I read during the break from Roger, a City of Rochester resident who's a donor to WXXI. I presume not with crypto, though I will make sure that if anybody wants to donate crypto to WXXI, I will find a way to make sure that happens. Roger says, question for your guests, if you buy something with Bitcoin, does any law protect you from fraud? With cash or credit, there are such laws. George, you were saying you assume all those laws would apply.
Fraud is fraud, and if I defraud you by selling you a lump of lead-painted gold and claim it's gold, or I somehow defraud you on Bitcoin, that's still fraud, and existing laws ought to cover that. I'm no lawyer, I will add. However, the difficulty is, if I go to your house to buy something on Craigslist and you defraud me, I've got an IP trail, I know where your house is, whatever it might be. With Bitcoin, it may be more difficult if I can't, or if the authorities can't access the person or persons who defrauded you.
Okay, Mike?
Yeah, fraud laws should still apply. Don't be fraudulent. I guess maybe what your listener was getting at is that Bitcoin is irreversible. So once you send Bitcoins out the door, they're gone. You can't get them back, especially if it's to a fraudster. There is no Bitcoin corporation that can reverse the charges. So I guess an extra level of caution is needed when dealing with Bitcoin purchases.
Okay. Pablo says, I think one of your guests mentioned more than 6,000 forms of cryptocurrency. How could any of us figure out which ones to buy, use, or sell? 6,000 forms. Mike, you said most of them are not worth talking about, but I'll start with you. What's the answer for Pablo there?
That's a very good question. How do we find out what's the best coin for you? first start by doing your own research. I wouldn't spend any money on a cryptocurrency without spending at least a week or two looking at it. There's plenty of information out there. Wikipedia, Twitter, Reddit, your social media form of choice, WXXI. I don't know. I would caution against buying Evancoin because it's currently held by a single party.
Yes. I would be in favor of people buying it, but
that's what makes a market. You got a buyer and a seller.
So Mike, and you know, I'm curious to get Gary and George's take on this, but when Pablo's asking, you know, to narrow it down, you know, you say figure out sort of what coin might be right for you, but is there, generally speaking, a half dozen or a dozen that you think right now have the confidence and will have some staying power?
Yeah, I do. I think Bitcoin's going to be around for a while, despite the current narrative. Bitcoin Cash is the most convenient and easily spendable. So I always tell people to start with that one. It's also like extremely easy to send. Ethereum is the second coin by market cap. It's a little more complicated, but you can do many cool things with it. And then there's a whole world of stable coins out there, which we probably don't have time to get into, but stable coins represent, it's like a cryptocurrency, except they're redeemable for a dollar. So the main example is Tether. If you have one Tether in your wallet, theoretically, you can redeem it for exactly $1. So that's not so much an investment, but it is considered a cryptocurrency.
Okay. Gary, what would you say to Pablo?
I would say more important than anyone being focused on the price of any of these technologies to be focused on the actual technology, because ultimately this is about, you know, not just price go up. This is about why this is special, why this is unique, why this is different. And so I agree that people need to do their own research and people need to understand things, you know, and educate themselves. The direction I would point you in would be Bitcoin, BTC, Ethereum, ETH. Are the ticker symbols. And it's interesting to learn about Monero, and just so you can compare and contrast the differences between Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Monero. But I would definitely recommend everyone, you know, learn what MetaMask is that you can install in your Chrome browser, and that will allow you to interact with a lot of these Ethereum websites in a decentralized way.
So if we talk in 2 years from now, what do you think the questions and the story of the narrative are? Where's it going next, George Conboy? What are you interested in next with crypto?
It needs to get a lot simpler, because if people have to spend a week researching it, or they have to learn what MetaMask is, I'm hearing things that I don't know what they are. You want to take that and buy your Starbucks with it, to go to our original example. If you got to spend a week researching it, if you got to learn about this technology, if you got to wonder about putting it in a different wallet every time you get some change, huge pain in the neck. If I can get it easily, if I can spend it easily, if I can transfer it easily, it has many good protections. There are many good qualities to crypto. But until you make it simple enough, the center of the bell curve is not there.
1 minute, Mike. What's the story going forward now?
I think ease of payments is going to be a big story in 2 years. How do you remit money to your relatives in the Philippines or in Thailand, or how do you get people out of poverty in Venezuela?
We flickered. We lost him for a second there. Gary, go ahead. Story going forward.
Yeah, so if you want to wait until the other side of the bell curve, then theoretically the price is going to be a lot higher. And so if you want to be an early adopter and learn what MetaMask is now before everyone else talks about it and before the news talks about it, then the price is going to be lower. So the early adopters will be rewarded to degrees of magnitude higher.
Okay. I did have some questions. We didn't really sort of jump into which are the best investments, because, again, a lot of the conversation this hour is about whether cryptocurrency becomes a currency.
Two topics.
As opposed to an investment.
I can't give investment advice.
Those questions always come up. You cannot give investment advice. So we'll leave that there. But unless you want to add some final thought on that part, Mike.
No, let's leave it there. I don't know if you can hear me anymore.
I can hear you. I can hear you just fine. Thanks for taking the time. Mike Komoransky is the head of Grapefruit Trading and a longtime Bitcoin supporter. And it's always an interesting conversation on these topics, and we appreciate the time and the expertise. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Evan.
Always nice to talk to Gary Palmer Jr., founder of MintingCoins.com and Bitcoin NYS. Where would you send people for more information?
For the greater Rochester area, we're on meetup.com/Bitcoin-NYS. Join the community. Reach out to me if you have any questions. I'm here to help people for free as long as I have the time in my schedule.
All right. And George Conboy, they know where to find you at Brighton Securities, Mr. Chairman. But, you know, you didn't come here to gloat because you've been somewhat a skeptic on crypto. I think you're just holding crypto's feet to the fire if they want to become more mainstream.
I've never been really negative on it. It just needs to sort itself out. It's a very early stage technology, not for Gary, but for that center of the bell curve. And I love to observe it, but I'm not there to use it yet.
Thanks for being here, as
always. Happy to be here. Thanks.
All right. Short break. More connections coming up.